us today for the first part of our Intro to Financial Aid class. So this is a two-part class. We're really excited about it. And I know many of you will be also joining us for our Financial Aid Institute next week. So this will lead very nicely into that. I want to give a special welcome to our three presenters who are going to be with us over the next 2 days. They've got lots of great perspective, lots of great material, and then lots of great questions. So part of this will be coming away with probably more questions than you have answers, and that's okay. We want you to leave and go back and connect with others at your school in order to seek answers to some of the questions that we pose over the next couple of days. This is just a quick overview of our program for day one and day two. We've got it broken down into 6 modules that we'll cover and we'll walk through. We are going to do some breakout rooms. We are going to do some polls. So though everyone is Zoom fatigued at this point already in the year, I'm sure we are going to make this as interactive as possible. Even if Steve and Genevieve and Jordy have to sing or dance at some part to wake you up, we will do that. Just a couple of quick housekeeping items. Yes, we will share the recordings and the slide decks will be posted all within 24 hours. We really encourage you. I know this is hard. I know you're at school. I know you're in the middle of probably 100 things, but to turn off your alerts and be fully present. This is meant to be interactive and engaging. Part of this, just as it would be if you were live at a conference, is your ability and willingness to connect and share with others. So while when we do those breakout rooms and a few other things, we hope you'll walk away with a few professionals who you might say in a week or a month or 2 months, gosh, I'm going to send that person an email and ask him or her what they're doing at their school, because I remember meeting her at the ASAP Financial Aid Institute. So use each other in that way. You can definitely use the chat box for questions as they come along or discussion. And many of you or all of you should have received the worksheet in advance that I sent out about a half an hour ago. So feel free to use that worksheet. We're going to do a quick audience participation, sort of reflection for a moment, and I am going to share a Padlet link and ask you to think for 1 minute before I share it. By the end of these 2 days, I hope to have learned, accomplished, had answered, obviously something related to financial aid and not necessarily other stages of your life or things that you're working on. Let me add the link to the chat box and I'll let you all have a moment to reflect and share with us. Again, it's sort of with the end in mind, what do you hope to have learned, accomplished, had answered about financial aid or your work with financial aid by the end of these 2 days. Let me just add the link. Okay, so you should be able to click on that link. It will take you to a Padlet screen with lots of colorful fall leaves on it. And if you hit the plus sign in the bottom of the screen, you can add the mine's a pink plus sign in the very bottom right-hand corner. You can add your thought. And give people just a couple of minutes, maybe 2 minutes to do this. I will share my screen so that our presenters can see your responses, and then we will head back to our coursework for the day. Okay, so I think people are typing and there we go. All right, so lots of good stuff. I'm hoping to have answered what are the pieces of financial aid that I need to have in front of me, front of mind at all times. Hope to be more comfortable and confident while reading financial aid applications. Hope to have a list of FAQs that families have about financial aid and the process. Tighten up our current net tuition process, more comfortable and confident with the financial aid application, basics of financial aid. I am totally new. Good for you. We're happy to have you here. Another one, I am new to this role, so looking to soak it all in so that I can be more comfortable in this role. Understand how to strategically use tuition assistance to meet enrollment goals. That's a good one, and one that we will definitely be talking about over the next 2 days and in next week's Financial Aid Institute. All right, so I'll let folks just finish this up. I will download this as a PDF at the end and share it with all of you so you can all see each other's thoughts and responses. And have a little bit more information about, again, what you hope to accomplish over the next few days. I'm going to go back to the PowerPoint presentation. I hope you're seeing my slides again now, and move to our next slide. We are going to, before Jordy Mitchell jumps in and covers some foundational questions that we really want to pose to launch today's session, I am going to put a quick poll up, and we're going to do these polls at a couple of different times just to get a sense of where you are with some of these things. And you can be totally honest if you don't know the answer. There's always an I do not know option. And that is fine, because hopefully you will know by the end of this session today or tomorrow. So people can go ahead and answer that question in the poll. What percent of the schools, of your school's budget, does financial aid represent? So what percent of your operating budget is represented by financial aid, or is devoted to financial aid? Okay, so lots of people chiming in here. I'm gonna give it another 10 seconds. Love to get another 10 or 15 people to participate. Almost up to 75-80%. All right, I'm gonna end this poll and share the results and then kick it off to Jordy. Looks like many of you, 67%, don't know, so no problem. It's going to be one of your homework questions for tonight. And then 19% said 10 to 20%, and 11% said 21 to 30%, and 3%, one of you is lucky enough to have 30 to 40% of your budget dedicated to financial aid. So Jordy, I'm going to turn it over to you, and it's all yours. Okay. And
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
And great. And we have to be a little careful about saying lucky enough to have financial aid in that range, because they might be giving that much financial aid out in order to fill their school. So
I kind of bit my tongue when I said that, so I apologize. So I should not have.
There are a few schools out there that have budgets like that because they've got big endowments, and those schools are usually smart enough not to share that with the rest of us because of the daggers that we would shoot at them, right, Vivian, who's from a school like that, or used to be at a school like that.
Used to be, Jordy, used to be.
Used to be.
The reason why I'm here is because I switched schools.
I know. Welcome to our world, Viv. We're happy to have you here.
Different ball game I'm playing, Jordy. Different ball game.
So my goal isn't to answer these questions for you. My goal is to just share a little bit about why this is important. And as I'm looking at these questions, the one thing that I want to remind people is the trend is also important. I'm a big trend guy. So if you look at your financial aid budget in dollars, you should know what that is, but you should also know what the trend at your school is. And as some of you are new, I'm looking at Rohan, who's kind of new at his school, but not new to the business. And, you know, it's amazing the number of people on this call, even though we're supposed to be 101, who are really, really strong practitioners in the admissions world. So I'm hoping that we can add value for you all, and you will add value to the rest of us as well. But these are important questions for you to know, and the trend is equally as important. So if you don't know what your financial aid budget is, what your school's commitment is to this, you really should ask. If there's somebody in your office who knows, you can ask them. But if not, go to your business office. I find that one of the best resources around financial aid and statistics and historical statistics in most schools is actually the business office, because they've been keeping this data in the absence of the admission or financial aid office if they haven't been keeping it. So you wanna know your budget, partly because you need to know How much money do we think we have to offer next year? Right? That's your current budget minus who leaves and graduates and a couple other things in there. What percentage of your students receive aid? A lot of people are going to ask that, especially people who care deeply about a diverse community. So you want to know the answer to that. And again, you want to know the trend. What's your school's commitment to that? Is your school's commitment to that going to grow, which you could communicate to people? If not, do you think it should? And how do you engage yourself in those conversations to try and encourage your board and your school to increase the aid budget, either to help you reach your enrollment goals, your revenue goals, or to become the kind of diverse community that most of our schools aspire to be? And what percentage of your operating budget does FA represent? That's another trend more than anything else, and is indicative of your school's commitment to having a diverse community from a socioeconomic standpoint. And what's your average grant, and how's this changed? And the reason that's important is, and Genevieve, who's a co-presenter, and I worked together for many years, and we were always looking at that average grant, because I'll give you a perfect example. I would be able to go to the board and say, gosh, we have a wonderful budget. That's terrific. But with an average grant of $35,000 a year, you need to understand that that's less than 3 grants per $100,000. And that really helped the board and helped the head of school quantify what that dollar amount actually would mean in terms of the percentage of students on financial aid. So it's just really quick and easy math. Is that average grant been going up? Which Geneva, we saw that at the school in Boston where we worked together for many years. If so, you need to know why. Is it intentional? Because you're trying to bring in more lower income people? Is it because the middle range of the income group is feeling stretched? But you want to know what that average grant is and what that trend is. And then when you look at that, you want to try and find an explanation of why that trend is moving in that direction. So these are answers that you want to have in your hip pocket, not just because you will be asked, but in the context of what this means to your institution's both commitment to socioeconomic diversity and direction. Thanks, Debbie. I don't know if Steve or Genevieve want to add anything to that quick context for why you should know the answers to those questions.
No, I like the fact, thank you, Jordy, for that. I like the fact of diversity. At the end of the day, we want to have diversity of thought in our institutions. And that's just one way that we can increase that. We look at diversity in 4 areas. Ethnicity is where most people start and end, but also socioeconomic diversity, geographic diversity for us, and religious faith. So this is one other way that you can work on that.
Steve, I'm sorry, I held the intro slide at the beginning, and if you all want to just give a really quick intro as you kick off your sessions, that's great too. So here we go. I'll do your slides. There we go.
So Steve Brown, I'm the Director of Financial Aid and Institutional Research at the Lovett School in Atlanta, more affectionately known as Caitlin's dad. My daughter attends Lovett. She's now an upper schooler. For those of you who don't know Lovett is a day school co-ed, 1,660-ish students, and been around since 1926, so coming up on our centennial. I'm so glad to be here. My role is to discuss kind of baseline terms and definitions that we as financial aid professionals should be aware of. I'm of the vein that regardless of your level of understanding, we're going to do very baseline, but also more importantly, these will serve as a glossary and a workbook for you. So you can constantly resort back to it. I pulled out to the group, this was my Institute for New Financial Aid Professionals from 2007 that I still go back to. And we hope that this these slides will serve. And this is a kind of a brief overview. We're going to talk about each one of these, but also get a little granular with some terms.
Steve, I have a quick poll that I might throw up just to get you launched on these definitions. So let me just click to that poll.
This could be one of our technical difficulty moments.
Not a problem. Because I'm sure Debbie doesn't like to be known that she's frozen like that. But anyway.
I believe she did freeze, and I don't know which poll she was thinking of. So I would say go on. Yeah.
Good stuff. So the first slide is what is financial aid? And when that slide pops up. There are different types of financial aid when we're talking. One is, and you hear these terms quite a bit, but need-based sounds just like what it is. A school will calculate a family's financial need, usually utilizing a third party. Some of you may have heard FACTS or FAST or Smart Aid, which is a sponsor here, SSS, those types of vehicles. Merit-based is just what it sounds like. And here, the school will award assistance based on a child's either academic, athletic, or artistic talent, hence the term merit. And tuition remission, which is for some schools, especially attracting some top-notch talent in terms of faculty, is a great term. For some in the business office, tuition remission can be synonymous with bankruptcy if you don't have a strong endowment, but tuition remission is where a school waives the cost or a portion of the cost for an employee or their dependents or partners. Typically seen again to attract top talent or an employee benefit. So one of the words I hear quite a bit is, do you offer scholarships at your school? And I want to kind of break that down. Scholarships, grants, loans, those are things that you hear quite a bit in our roles. And what's the difference, right? So scholarship is a money-based award. And again, these are general definitions. There may be some other definitions that your school may have. But typically, a scholarship is a money-based award specifically designated for education-related expenses, okay? A grant, it's a gift aid awarded to students, again, also usually tied to financial need. And a loan is very similar to what we all are aware of. A loan is money that you borrow with the expectation to return it. Some schools, even though they give aid, there's a percentage that they expect the family to pay back after graduation, for example. But what's the difference, right? In all of those different terms, the difference is how it's repaid, right? A loan obviously requires you to return some money back to a lender and or the school, and grants and scholarships are similar, except grants are usually based on financial need and not merit, typically. Okay. Other types of scholarships that you may hear, endowed or named scholarships, right? Again, a scholarship that's endowed or named is usually a donor has provided some money towards a scholarship, and it's also part of the school's endowment, or your endowment, which is something else you might want to know as a financial aid professional. Tax credit scholarships, some of you may or may not have heard this term. We here in Georgia have it, and if you notice at the very bottom of that slide, there are 21 states that offer this. So for us, an individual or a corporation or a business can earmark a portion of their tax liability to an independent school of their choice, right? And so there are some schools who are philosophically opposed to that, and there are some, that's a way where you can actually increase your financial aid budget. So it can be strategic, but those are something that if you're one of those 21 states and you haven't heard about that, I would definitely do some research around that, and there may be a way that you can add to your financial aid budget.
Steve, I'm back. I am totally apologetic. My whole Zoom shut down. I've never had that happen to me before. But let me just pause and let people make sure that people are doing okay as far as questions or anything that Steve has shared. And I'm going to share my screen and we'll go back to full slide.
Just for the record, Debbie, I took a screenshot of that pose of yours when you were frozen. So if there's ever any issue with that, I am going to post that to the free world. So
if I'm ever being like roasted just FYI, at some, at some retirement party or something,
it was a classic. I had an opportunity, so I had to take
Steve, it. So. Hold on tight to that photo. You could get lots of money for it, probably, right?
Yeah.
All right.
Work on that extra dessert I was asking for earlier. So
great. Awesome.
Nah. Okay. So we were on need blind versus need aware. Okay. So thank you for that.
There we go.
So here's an interesting term that we hear from time to time. What's the difference, right? So one, need blind is taking in consideration your admission decisions without a family's ability or not being aware of, you know, a family's ability or taking into consideration a family's ability to pay. Right. Need aware is you're making admission decisions with an applicant's ability to pay, taking into account. What difference does that make? Right. What could result from that? Right. For some of us, we may have a robust financial aid budget where the folks that we're going to admit, we're going to have the right amount of money to attract those students and provide some sort of grant. Some of us, we're limited for a variety of different reasons, right? So what could result from this is sometimes you hear the term gapping or financial gap. And again, a lot of these terms are pretty self-explanatory, but just to kind of dive in granularly, a financial aid gap occurs when a school's financial aid award for a student does not meet that student's need. I'm going to show an example in just a little bit, but that unmet need is what's considered a gap, right? And we'll show you an example in a second. There are some schools, there are some admissions offices that will, again, make decisions, distribute as much aid as they can at the time. And for those that we are planning to accept and we do not have enough funds to distribute, we will place them on a financial aid wait list, right? And that is great for some folks, and many folks are gonna panic. Does this mean I'm gonna get aid? Does this mean I'm not gonna get aid? So there are terms, and just to kind of talk about what that wait list means. But let's talk about
financial aid. Steve, can I jump in for just a minute? Can we go back to the previous slide? Mm-hmm. A little bit of an editorial comment. Just know that financial gapping, for those of you who know a little bit about financial aid, almost all the tools out there try and determine what a family's discretionary income is. And then based on how much discretionary income, the tool that you're using, the algorithm that you're using, determines how much of that discretionary income they feel should be available for education. So when you gap, you are expecting a family to use a higher percentage of their discretionary income than the formula would ask them to spend. Schools that gap will often see higher incidences of slow pays and defaults. Just be aware of that. And then with the financial aid wait list, two things around that with the need blind where, you're saying to a family, we love your child's accepted, but we don't have money for your child right now. There can often be a tendency, if that is the what you use, for a family to try and make it work, even if money doesn't become available. They'll try and make it work for a year and then they'll apply again. So some schools will say, if you are admitted on no aid, unless there's a change, you can't qualify for aid later because families will take out a second mortgage to get their foot in the door. So I just wanted to add a little context around what could happen based on what your school's system is. And know, in my mind, in all fairness, I don't gap, and I stopped using a financial aid wait list a long time ago because families were making financial decisions that weren't in their best interest because they so desperately wanted their child in the school. And one of the ways to prevent that in my mind was not to offer admission and then say, we'll see whether financial aid's available or not, because the reality is in most cases it won't be. So it's kind of like a soft reject, and I think that's hard on families.
Well, in addition to that, Jordy, it also puts families in a really uncomfortable position, right? To be able to, you know, say to your child, you worked really, really hard to get into the school, but we don't have money to pay. Now, if the conversation is with a four-year-old, that's slightly different than with a 14-year-old, right? I don't want to have that conversation with a 14-year-old. Speaking as someone who has a 14-year-old.
Thanks for letting us interrupt, Steve.
No, not interrupting at all. This is what we're talking about. And I want to piggyback on what you both shared, right, with this slide right here. So financial need is typically calculated this way, right? Whatever your cost of attendance is, you'll hear that term sometimes. So tuition in most of our schools isn't the only thing it takes to attend our schools. And so you might want to have a sense of also tuition, fees. Some of those are required, some of those are not. Books and field trips, and I see you all taking copious notes just to understand. You'll get all of these slides, by the way. Interestingly enough, the family contribution is where you get some interesting looks and comments. Jordy mentioned discretionary funds, and folks, I have yet to meet a family that agrees with the family contribution number, right? You do not expect me to pay that, really? I would also defer to, again, that third party or your policy, but that family contribution is usually calculated, as Jordy mentioned, with an algorithm that maybe you will have internally or the third party that you choose to help process your financial aid applications. And then you subtract those two, and what's left over is that financial need, okay? So let's look at an example of if you were to meet full need, right? So school X has a tuition of 38 grand. Your third party or your methodology has determined the family can contribute 28. That remaining difference is what's considered financial need. Some will say demonstrated need. Right, you can, as a school, choose to fund that in multiple ways. And in this example, you have a school-funded grant. Again, grant, the biggest thing between a grant, scholarship, and those loans is about repayment. So a grant, some would say that's free money, doesn't have to be repaid. And then we also have an alumni scholarship. That's that name, that's endowed scholarship, for example. We met 100% of need based on what our calculations or our methodology said that the family can pay. And we met the difference. And that's 100% need met in this case. Here's a situation where an example of gapping, right? Same tuition, same $28,000 family contribution that was calculated. The need is 10 grand, but we are only going to provide that $8,000 school grant. Why? Could be in our policy. The family needs to have some teeth in the game. Could be I've run out of financial aid funds. We don't have any more. Could be a variety of different reasons, but there's an unmet need. And that's an example of gapping. For example, you may have a certain threshold. The school policy says we're only going to cover 80% of demonstrated need, whatever that is. It's a variety of different ways of how you get to that number. And by the way, you need to have a philosophical conversation with your office, the business office, the admission office, if you're all one and encompassing. There is merit to defer to the committee. We'll talk about that later. You may be one of the whole committee, but if you can defer to the committee, it takes away that personal, this is what you're doing to my child. This is what you're doing to our family. How could you do this to us? No, it's the committee who made this decision, whether it's eight of you or just you, there's benefits to that. All right. Indexed and sliding scale tuition. These are other terms that are over the last several years, and you may hear this from a Mark Mitchell from NAIS. Financial aid may have a negative connotation when it comes to assistance. So we as schools are coming up with different terms that mean the same thing, but maybe conveyed a different way, right? So these are one of those terms, index or sliding scale tuition. An index basically is, it's a departure from the notion of we're offering financial aid and that your costs will be based on your particular situation as a family, right? Same thing with the sliding scale, based on your family's household income, based on the size of your, we will give, you know, a tuition that meets your family's situation. At the end of the day, though, index tuition is the same as financial aid, but the marketing is different. Why does that make a difference, right? Because the connotation can be conveyed a different way. It's how it's marketed. And for some, that makes a difference. And so whether a school discounts that $30,000 tuition with the $20,000 of financial aid, or we say, because of your situation, that index tuition for your family is going to be 10 grand. It's how you present that same information. The difference, though, is, especially if you're a smaller school, it may convey the idea that we're trying to work with you as a family that fits your needs so you can experience what we have to offer as a school. And then the last piece I'll mention is access and affordability. This kind of goes back to why are we offering financial aid? So years ago, several years ago, financial aid's purpose was about access. Those who don't have the opportunity or the access to what our schools have to offer. Oftentimes that was students of color. Those were those who may not have access, you know, geographically, a variety of different ways. But since major financial, I guess, for lack of a better term, mishaps, like the housing bubble, right? We have, and the fact that our tuitions are far outpacing the rate of inflation, right? We now have to be able to say, can our families who are usually in the top 5%, top 1% of household income earners, they're now having difficulty affording our schools. And so financial aid now is not only just access to those who wouldn't normally have access to our schools, but making it affordable for families. I tell people all the time, you'd be surprised who's receiving assistance. We have families with $40,000 and $50,000 household incomes and north of $250,000 household incomes earning.
Steve, can I jump in for a second about that affordability? You know, in the old days, we all had a barbell, right? And I'm hoping, and when I say a barbell, you have this huge disparity in incomes in our student populations, right? You have people who are getting full financial aid and people who may be getting some or none. But the result of that was we're having populations and institutions that didn't represent reality. Right. And we're all saying we're trying to train our students and train our families to go out and be ambassadors in the world, principled engagement, whatever. And what we were doing unintentionally was reinforcing stereotypes. Oftentimes that had to do with our Black and Brown families. Right. And so in the move to fill in the barbell, right, that move also switch towards affordability, because now we're meeting what we call middle need. And I say middle need, we'll talk more about that on Friday, because things are so expensive. Middle need really means middle need in your pack, right? It's not the middle class. But in the effort to fill in the barbell, now we're trying to have socioeconomic diversity across the wide swath, right? So now we're trying to build a student population in our schools that is more representative, and that absolutely helps to prepare our students to go out into the world, right? To have conversations with a large swath of people, not just one type, and hopefully to uncouple some of those biases and stereotypes that have been so endemic in our institutions. So thanks for letting me jump in on that.
Thanks, that's perfect. So I'm... that's kind of the baseline of the terms and definitions. So
I have a couple of polls that I'm a little bit afraid to click on, but before Jordy gets launching here, I'm going to put those polls up, and a couple of them people will see are retroactive polls that ask about things that Steve just taught us about. So maybe people will have a little better sense now. But the first one is your process need blind or need aware? Do you have a sense of what you do or your school does? And certainly if you don't know, that's fine too. And you're going to go back and find out after, after today's class. So are you a need blind school, a need aware process, or I don't know? I'll give people another 30 seconds just to answer that.
While you're answering that, some of us market one thing, but we actually do another. So for some of us, that is false advertising. For some of us, it's a way to protect ourselves. But think about that as your, is that something that's verbally articulated to your prospective families? Is it an internal policy? So thank you for that.
Yeah, good point, Steve. And I should have said, is your practice need blind or need aware, and not is your what you're saying. So, okay, so it looks like 67% are need aware, 24% are reporting, or 10 schools are reporting need blind, and then a handful who do not know. Let's just do another couple of quick questions before we turn it over to Jordy. The next one is, do you gap financial aid awards? Do you know if your school and your process has a gapping piece to it? Yes, we gap. No, we do not gap. Or I don't know if we gap or fully what gapping means. I didn't launch that poll. There we go. So do you gap your financial aid awards? Based upon the lesson that Steve just taught in terms of need and unmet need, where does your school or your office fall? All right, so it looks like another couple people are gonna answer. And
although we had a class, it's okay if you say, I do not know what gapping means.
It is okay, we will have a gapping call out session at some point for more clarity if that's necessary.
We'll have these at your disposal for the rest of your lives.
All right. So look at that. 46% said yes, we gap, and 46% said no, we do not gap. And 7% said I'm not fully sure what gapping means or don't really know if we do that. All right. And then one final question before Steve kicks us off. Oh, I guess not. I think we're good to go before Jordy kicks us off. So I'm going to close the polls. And Jordy, it's all yours.
Okay, thanks. So the reason I like to think about institutional priorities is because we probably don't need a poll, but anytime I'm with a group of admission enrollment financial aid people, and I ask how many people have more money than they know what to do with, needless to say, very few, if any, hands go up. And very few of those hands are staying down for self-preservation, I'm sure. Most of them are staying down because they don't have enough money. And this is our financial aid budget is our most valuable enrollment management tool. And since it is a limited resource, if we are going to distribute it in a way that, well, let me rephrase that. We should be distributing it our financial aid budget in a way that meets with our institutional priorities, which, by the way, should not be set by our offices. And so one of the things I used to do every year for both admissions decisions and financial aid decisions was sit down with my head of school and say, what are our institutional priorities? This is what they were last year. Have they shifted? There'll be a slide in a couple minutes where I mention what those were. In many cases, lots of schools' institutional priority is meeting their enrollment budget, in which case you may be looking to use your financial aid budget more for affordability than access, because if I can get two students for $15,000 grant apiece versus one student for $30,000 apiece, I'm generating more net tuition revenue with that affordability metric, and that might get me closer to my goal. However, what if your school also has goals around socioeconomic diversity and others? It's very difficult, especially since, and you probably already know this, everybody who works in our schools, all of our faculty and staff, they have their own sense of what those priorities should be based on their own life experience. So we need an institutional stance, and we need to be able to say to our colleagues and others, this is the school's institutional priorities, either from the board or the head of school. So I always like to ask those questions. And if you could, can you go to the previous slide for just a minute, make sure I didn't miss anything, right? So access, mission imperative, is it you just trying to fill seats or beds? We've already talked about with Steve, and we're gonna talk about some more. Is there an expectation that access to the full experience at the school? Because that means that your financial aid budget doesn't just pay for enrolling students, and the board needs to know that. And then in certain cases, especially if you have a high school, there are signature programs that are always, do you need the baseball starting pitcher? Do you need the first chair violinist? Do you need a male who can carry the lead in your musical? These are all, you need an ice hockey goalie. Do you need more kids from, you know, so these are all things that are very real that create a dynamic tension when we're looking at this limited resource. Okay, so if you could go ahead for a minute. So back one more, back two more, one more, hold on. And one more again. No breakout rooms, we haven't gotten there. So I think we've gone the wrong way. There we go. The financial aid committee. Thanks. Great. And one of the reasons I asked this question is, this is obviously an opportunity. If you have a committee, if you're not a committee of one or two, as some schools are, there's lots of schools, frankly, that have committees that in my mind are way too big, because we're all bringing our own priorities and preferences to this conversation. But the school's priorities need to be communicated to your financial aid committee very clearly up front. Or maybe your financial aid committee is the group that you engage in to determine what your institutional priorities for that year should be. Geneva and I didn't, we were the financial aid committee. So I basically just went to the head of school, but in previous schools I've had a committee and was very clear to have a conversation before we started talking about files about, here's what I saw as the needs of the school, and I wanted that committee to confirm or readjust those priorities. That's where the committee can be helpful. Also, if you're doing a committee, it helps to have somebody from the business office. Why? Because they can tell you who's in arrears, who are the slow pays on financial aid, which might indicate we need to have a conversation, or maybe the gapping is hurting this family. If you gap, there's all sorts of reasons. The business office tends to sometimes know part of a family's story that we don't. And likewise with the head of school. Sometimes the head of school will know there's something going on in the life of a family that we won't, that we should know about and might impact our grant at any point in time. Thanks, Debbie. Next slide. So this is really what I mean by enrollment management priorities. And these are all very real in any school, I believe. You know, mission appropriate students, how can we meet our budget with mission appropriate students? That's really important. What does mission appropriate mean? If you're not sure at your school, that's another conversation to have. When I say fill soft classes or classes with weaker applicant pools, we don't like to be under-enrolled in certain grades. And we also have the ebbs and flows of admission demand from grade to grade are fascinating to me. And I would rather over-enroll in a class where I've got more full pay mission appropriate students, so that in a softer class where I don't have a strong applicant pool, I can use my financial aid to fill that class with students who are a good fit. I think we get ourselves into trouble in schools when we start enrolling students around that mission appropriate margin in the long run, that doesn't normally end up well for us or for the student. Old news, insider term, right? So these are families who have been full pay at your in your school, but now something has changed in their financial situation. Somebody's lost a job, or they're adding another independent school or college tuition. These all are legitimate reasons for a family that's been full pay to now legitimately qualify for financial aid. Where do you put them in your priorities? Siblings, right? I had an aha moment. It only took me about 25 years to realize that when you enroll the sibling of a financial aid student, if they are not already paying tuition, that additional sibling will cost you a full tuition. It won't show up that way because you'll take the total need and split it. But if they're not paying tuition for that sibling that you're about to enroll and they're already on aid, it's going to cost you a full tuition. And so how are you prepared to deal with that? Are siblings going to be that top priority? Obviously, diversity for many of us is so, so important. And we're all always looking for that. And as we know, very unfortunately, because of the history of race and wealth in America, a lot of those wonderful, diverse families that we want just don't have the historic wealth. I took Genevieve's class 101 on that. Thank you, Genevieve. That was really important for me to learn more about that. So if we want diversity in our schools, we have to be ready to help those families not just afford us, but feel like they're a part of a school. And then I call this sculpting a class. This is a high class worry that, if I like to, so 8 to 9, usually a big entry point at schools that have multiple grades. And I like to talk to the 8th grade dean and say, tell me about this class. What does this class need moving up to be more well-rounded? Do they need more students who are academically motivated? Do they need more students who are social glue? Do they need, is it a weak or a strong class artistically and athletically? And that way, when we're looking at a group of qualified students who need aid, and we only have so much aid, we're spending that aid in a way that is strengthening that particular class. And managing and predicting available aid from year to year. I don't have my spreadsheet up, but I have a spreadsheet that allows us to see how much financial aid is in each grade. And if you can't level that out, if you have a high school and you can't level that out, let's say I'm making these numbers up, so don't be intimidated. But let's say our goal is we have four high school classes and we want roughly $1 million in each class so that when they graduate, we get $1 million back to redistribute. But now all of a sudden we've got a class going into the senior year with only $600,000 in financial aid. The following year, we're going to have less money to reach out to with new families. So if you can even that out, those peaks and valleys, it's great when you graduate a class with $1.5 million and you're going, woohoo, right? Sky's the limit with new students. But the flip side of that is if you're graduating or attriting not a lot of money, you're creating a challenge for your enrollment management goals in the next year. And I hope that makes sense.
Jordy, real quick, Jordy, I'm going to put you on the spot here. By the way, Jordy has some incredible slides and presentations. Let's just say hypothetically, can I get a look at your spreadsheet after this 2-day workshop? Is that something that anyone in this institute can take advantage of?
Hypothetically, of right, Steve? Hypothetically.
Yes, please. I would love that. I will mention spreadsheets. That wasn't the point here. And I do know that there's some spreadsheets at the financial aid, but I have several that I've used over the years to help track financial aid and those kinds of things. And I'm happy to share those or even put them in a shared Google Drive and people can look at them and choose the ones that they'd like to copy and make their own. I'm sorry, go ahead, Genevieve.
I just wanted to say one last thing about the last slide about sculpting a class, because typically we all have entry years, right? And that's where we're focused on our entry years. But it's really interesting that sometimes you use your financial aid, say you haven't met those needs in a particular grade and you can get it done in those in-between grades. And that's a really special place where your financial aid dollars can serve in targeting your first graders. Say your first graders are very weak, say, for example, diverse class or whatever the need is. And that's a very specific way of sculpting a class outside of just building your ninth graders or building your seventh graders or whatever, that targeted enrollment management. So anyway, thanks, Jordy.
Thank you. So let me do this. Is there any way I can share my screen very briefly, Debbie?
Sure, let me just unshare and it's all yours.
I'll be quick.
I think people are gonna wanna see what you have to show, so.
So it's a little overwhelming when you first look at this, but this is the profile of every grade at my school. Geneva's seen this, I've used this for years. I can use this for all sorts of reasons, gender balance, financial aid per grade, faculty aid per grade. You can see that the NAIS categories of diversity have been broken out so that we can easily identify where there might be incidences of racial isolation. So that can become an enrollment management priority. But what I was really referring to was these numbers here. And see, this is total tuition FA. This year in my school, we're graduating $400,000 versus 2 years from now, we have almost 600,000. Well, when I first did this sheet, when I was new 2 years ago, I went to our CFO and I said, look, we need to figure out how we can have more than this $400,000 for 200 new students when this class graduates. So we've got a plan, but this spreadsheet allowed me to identify where and when we were going to graduate not enough money to help me out the next year. So we've been planning for this for 2 years. And it just helps you see it, at least the way my brain works. It helps me track and see, you know, from this financial aid category. And then if all of these other categories I created because they're important for enrollment management at my school. So you could take a sheet like this and modify it so that what you see is what's important to enrollment management at your school. But to be able to see what's coming down the pipeline like this is extraordinarily helpful. You know, everything from, you know, if we look at if gender balance is important in your co-ed school, and I look at my fifth grade, and I've got 28 boys and 37 girls. Well, next year in the sixth grade, which is an entry point, boys are gonna be an enrollment management priority. I can see that very easily and quickly when I lay out my data this way. So it's not a spreadsheet conversation, but I just wanted to give you an example since Steve was nice enough to point it out.
Thanks, Jordy. Awesome. And I did volunteer that you might have a Google Doc or spreadsheet that you might be willing to share as a resource
after this class. I'm happy to talk more about that. And there was one more question I think that was asked about, repeat the sibling piece for a minute. And I know it was a little bit complicated. And really what that means, remember that if you have a financial aid family with one child in a tuition charging school, we are asking them to pay everything they can for that one child. The fact that they're adding another child doesn't mean they can pay any more money. So if we enroll that second child and their RFC, their recommended family contribution is $20,000 for one child, it's probably $20,000 for two children. So if we add that sibling, their ability to pay doesn't go up. The net amount of financial aid to add that second child for a family that already has one on financial aid is a full tuition. Does that make any more sense? Right.
Thanks, Jordy.
That's just the way it works, but I just wanted to make sure. Yeah, no, but it took me forever to kind of realize that. And I've always worked at schools where siblings are priority. But all of a sudden, if you've got a limited budget and you're looking at your applicant pool and there's 20 siblings from families on financial aid, that's a yikes moment. All right, so this slide basically just highlights the competing interests that we often encounter in our schools. And that is, with a limited resource, usually another spreadsheet that we used to put together was, and Genevieve helped me with this, was we would take all of these institutional priorities in our applicant pool who were acceptable, and we would do a quick read on approximately how much their grant, how much of a grant they would need. And gee, what a surprise. At the end of the day, when we totaled up the financial need of all the students in these different priority categories, it far, far exceeded our entire financial aid budget. So now what do we do? Everybody in these buckets in our school wants that to be the top priority. And that's where the institutional priorities comes in. We don't have the resources to cover it all. So sitting down with your head of school, sitting down with your financial aid committee, laying out the enrollment needs of your school and saying, okay, you have to prioritize this. It's not my job. That's pretty important, I think. And I also was constantly reminding people. So full disclosure, school with a lot of pressure to have strong athletic programs. A lot of those student athletes qualified for financial aid. School also wants to increase their diversity. If the budget doesn't increase and you want both of those things to happen, a shift in one direction is by definition a shift away from these others with a limited resource. And I don't think most of the people in our schools really truly understand that. You want to be more diverse? I love it. But if you're not giving me more money to be more diverse, are we going to enroll fewer faculty children or fewer student athletes or fewer kids that can make our orchestra world class? It really is the ultimate challenge that we face with limited resources of financial aid. So I want you all, when you get the opportunity, if you're not overseeing this, but when you go back to your teams and your staff, encourage your team and your staff to be proactive about understanding what these priorities are, because they are what will guide you as you're determining who to grant money to and who, unfortunately, you can't. All right, that's it for me. Thanks.
I'm going to get fired as the bus driver of the slides, so I apologize, but everybody just hang with me. All right, so we're going to go into some breakout rooms real quick. This is the part of the conference when you might be getting up to get a cup of coffee and want to meet a few other people at the conference. We're going to ask folks and give time just to do a quick round the room. Jordy, Steve, and Genevieve will each be the room captain of a breakout room. So we'll have three breakout rooms. You're just going to do your name, your title, your role, your school. And then based upon what you've learned thus far, share hopefully your top institutional priority, if you're able to do a little bit of that sorting and ranking based upon the presentation, but share an institutional priority. And then if there's a few minutes left, you can obviously have questions for each other or for the presenters. I'm going to unshare my screen while I do the breakout rooms real quick. I'm happy we've had some really nice conversation going on in the chat room. So I'm happy for anyone to pose any of their questions from the chat box. It'll take me just a few minutes just to do this, but if anyone has a question and wants to ask it out loud, you're welcome to do so. Okay, let me just make sure that our presenters are split into different rooms. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and open the breakout rooms. Again, I'll warn you of your time, but we're going to take about 10 minutes and enjoy.
I'm here. If you need anything, I'm going to stop recording for a minute.
Thank you. I don't know how. All right, everybody, welcome back. I always feel badly pushing that button because I feel like someone's going to get stopped mid-sentence. But I hope you had enough time to do a little bit of a meet and greet and think about your institutional priorities and questions that you'll obviously take back to your school and the rest of your team. So we did have a couple people share that that was not enough time. So I apologize for that. We're going to keep going and just stay on track with our agenda for the day. And Christopher Brennan is sharing that he had some good fast talkers, I think, in the last minute. So congratulations to the person who knew there was only 1 minute left and was able to get things moving. I'm going to share my screen and Genevieve is going to kick us off with our final module for today before we move on to just a quick Q&A and then your homework assignment for tonight. So let me share my screen and turn it back over to Genevieve.
Thank you so much, Debbie. We spent a lot of time. Thank you again, Steve and Jordy. For those who I haven't met yet, I'm Genevieve Rankle. I'm the Director of Financial Aid here at BBNN in Cambridge, which is a pre-K through 12 school. I've been around the school for the better part of 15 years, which is bizarre, but I've been in this role now almost 11 years, and I spent a decade of it with Jordy. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. I can get back to you on that later. And both my girls are here. They both started when they were 4, and they're now taller than me. So that says a whole lot. And a shout out to all my New York friends. I heard I'm a Spence girl at heart from New York City. So it's always great to hear by people in Long Island and Brooklyn, et cetera. So the flip side of financial aid, right? We talked about the grants, so we'll talk a lot more about that on Friday. But you know, financial aid is more than just tuition, right? It's how do our kids live on this campus, right? How are they living and existing in our school? And then Jordy talked a lot about the institutional priorities and the conversations. Well, this all keys into the key partnerships and relationships, right? How do we build the community? How do we enhance the student experience, right? What goes into making this work? Well, I think about this in two ways, right? Relationships with colleagues and relationships with families, right? And I need to think about it this way to get on the right path, right? Because there's a lot of work that we have to do in coming up with our institutional priorities, in coming up with our budgets, in coming up with our enrollment priorities, and in coming up with the needs of the kids, right? And sometimes these partnerships are a little stressful, we'll say, and a little strained. So it helps me to remember that we are all people. Now, I know that's obvious, right? But sometimes you have to state the obvious, because when you're dealing with the competing priorities, do I want the goalie? Do I want the violinist? And people get hot. People get emotional because it's their program. You've got to remember we're all people. We're all trying to get the job done. And remember to invest, right? Because each one of us, each one of our colleagues with whom we're trying to build these great relationships, as we're trying to fill seats, build programs, everyone's just trying to get the job done in whatever capacity they are. So the other side of that, right, relationship, because right in financial aid, we're holding both, right? We're holding our partnerships with our colleagues at school, but we're also holding partnerships with our families, right? Because it's about trust. And oftentimes in our families, I mean, in our offices, people think of it as oppositional, right? It was the financial aid office because it's about money. But we aim to flip that paradigm, right? Because if we're building with our families, right, and being that liaison between families and the school, we're going to build well. We're going to build trust. We're going to start in the admissions process, right? We're going to do whatever we can to have honesty and empathy, because we're asking some really hard questions of people who have never met us, and we're asking them to be super brutally honest and tell us everything. I remember one family once said, yeah, you want to know what I had for dinner last night? I'm like, pretty much, right? So those of you who know me know that in every chance I get, I'm going to crack a joke and I'm going to do whatever I can to make it funny, because you've got to create a safe environment. Why? We're trying to build for the long term, right? We're trying to build a community. We're trying to build an institution. We're trying to build safe spaces for our kids, right? When they had a lot of our schools had those mask at accounts, last summer, in the summer of 2020, those weren't about tuition, right? Those are about the student experience. Those are about how our students were made to feel from day to day. And that's where we come in directly. So in building those relationships and checking in, I use the re-enrollment process very deliberately and intentionally when I'm reading those PFSs to check in. How is this family doing? How is it going with this? Oh, you had a new baby. Oh, how fun. Whatever. It goes a long way into building that line of communication, right? Because again, it's about community and about partnerships. One of the tools that we started doing that I really love is this preemptive communication. Typically you'll get some communication from like a senior dean telling about portraits for the yearbook or whatever. And then afterwards, the financial aid office will come in and say, we're going to, you know, give you 50% off or whatever. What we started doing is doing the preemptive communication, reaching out to the financial aid families in advance and saying, hey, you're going to get this email. And it's about senior portraits. Know that we're going to discount you 50%. So when they get that email from the senior class dean or the photographer, there's now a sigh of relief, right? There's now a, they've got us. It's okay. Why is this so important? Because we need our families to tell us what's going on, right? And the more we know, the better we can help, the better we can serve, right? Because we all want DEI. Right. Debbie, if you don't mind jumping over to the next slide. You know, we're talking about building diversity as a priority, right? We're all mentioning the same thing, and this has come into hyper focus in the last 18 months. So I look at the financial aid office as trying to help our institutions accomplish what they say they want to do, right? It's the implementation of the intention. It's the I in the DEI. It's turning these mission goals into reality. How are our kids getting the cleats, right? How are they getting the laptop? Do you have a tutoring policy? Are we creating a burdensome experience that further reinforces whatever biases, stereotypes, whatever bad feelings that people might have? Are we putting obstacles in the way? Or are we helping them to get what they need so they can participate fully in the experience at our schools? You know, when we take a step back to look at it, it really illuminates where our daily practices are not aligned with our mission, right? And so that's where we get to partner, right? We get to work with our colleagues and see what can be done, not necessarily in the financial aid office, but can we facilitate that being done at another office? Can we help with those protocols, those policies, and those procedures, so it makes it more of a streamlined experience for our families, for our community? Because if you think about this, right, if you're thinking enrollment as a whole, think of the long-term implications. You create a great student family experience. Guess what? They graduate, they send their kids back to your school, right? And so now perhaps diversity becomes self-perpetuating. Right? And then they become teachers in your schools, right? And now you have a diverse faculty. Then they become donors at your schools, right? And so they have a stake in the game. Perhaps then they become board members. Think about these long-term effects of focusing on the student experience, focusing on the family, understanding who pays for stuff, and understanding really what needs to be paid for. So then to that end, I think about how do we get the job done? Right? That's the New Yorker in me. Let's just get down to it, right? Who are the key players in the process, right? The job doesn't happen from your head of school unless, you know, if you're in a small enough school, but then perhaps it does. But typically, the job happens from those who are on the ground, those who knows what the needs are, right? When actually does billing happen, right? Jordy and I used to spend hours talking about the aggregate sum, right? Because this person wants money for this, this person wants money for this, this person wants money for this. And they're all siloed talking about their programs. And then that poor family now has bills from all these different places and they're stuck, right? Are we slamming them with asks all at the same time, right? And so if we know these things, right, then we can think, how can we facilitate getting the work done? So this is the attitude that I need in order to get this done. I have to be intentional, right? I have to really be intentional about what I'm trying to do. Debbie, do you mind flipping to the next one? I have to have my spreadsheets and my documents ready. I mean, Jordy already shared about it. We are spreadsheet. My husband, quick joke, he called one day to say something like, I love you. And I'm deep in, right? I'm deep in doing this. And I'm like, can you put that on a Google Doc and enumerate why that's true? I mean, we're deep in it. And that's it because you have to be in order to explain what you're doing, to help our colleagues to understand what they're doing and what the effect is. So you have to be transparent. And you have to do this again and again and again. And so in building, in doing this, it builds trust. It builds community. It builds collaboration. And if you're methodical, people can follow your steps. And now it becomes sustainable, right? And it's not just about your office. It's actually about building your school community. So you pull in the right players, right? You build the partnerships with your colleagues. So now they own it, right? And it's not just yours. And it's not dependent on whoever lives in your office. It depends on who's in the school, right? And one other thing, of course, you keep it light. You have to keep it light. We had an ask the other day. I'm on with our bursar and somebody else in the business office, and we are howling because this was one of the craziest things any of us has ever seen, ever. But you have to, because we're not saving lives, right? We're just trying to build a community, but we're trying to build a community right. It takes time to be systemic, right? It takes time to be sustainable. It takes time to shift a culture. We've got to remember in all of this, right? Our majority of our institutions were not built with equity and inclusion in mind, right? We're trying, but there's so much that's embedded and ingrained in our practices that we don't even realize that's there. So that's where the patience comes in, right? It's messy work. And you got to get your butt in the chair with a pencil sharpened and take the time to think it through. But that is how we get to those objectives, you know, of our institution and why we're all here and hopefully in building right. I spoke quickly, forgive me, but I'm also mindful that we have 4 minutes left and no one wants to keep you over. So I hope you understood what I said.
Jeanine, you were awesome. Thank you.
I just want to add one more thing to that. That was great. Someone said succinctly, if equity is being invited to the dance, inclusion is being asked to dance. We want to have everyone involved there. Thank you.
That's awesome. Yeah. We actually have a minute or two. I know there's been some stuff going on in the chat box, so it's open for questions. We're going to go right up until 3:30. So we've got 4 minutes. So let's do it. If people have questions, if they want to share something from the chat box, as far as the conversation that was going on, happy to have. James, I know you had a question. He just said, that's a wonderful adjustment. How were you able to get access to the information about when those asks were going out?
It's taken a long time. And it's through building relationships across the campuses. We're in 3 campuses. And keeping my ear to the ground, I think one of the biggest pieces is I have 2 kids here. And so then I get to find out, wait, how'd you get those socks? Who paid for those socks? Where'd you get that hockey stick from? How'd that happen, right? And that is, it's such a privilege. And as they've moved up from being 4 years old, and right now they're about to be in high school next year, I get to see all of those nuances, right? Steve, you would agree with that, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's been one of the hardest parts moving to a new school for me, is finding ways to make those relationships and sort of get that background information. Yeah, thank you.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Yeah, other questions, other things from the chat? I am going to flip to the homework really quickly and show you those. Someone else just shared, there are some really good takeaways, things to think about in terms of our financial aid families and the day-to-day considerations. Just being aware of them is so important and so good to be mindful of. So thank you for the nice feedback that people have been adding in the chat about some of the content presented. Yes.
Can I ask a question?
Jump right in.
I mean, Jeanine, thank you. That was really beautifully worded, all of those things. And I just wonder if the accounting, and Steve mentioned it too, accounting for the full experience for your financial aid students, where does that fit into Jordy's slide about the pieces of the pie, right? Because all that stuff costs money is buying that hockey stick and those socks and discounting senior portraits by $50. And I came from the land of more money than God, right, Devo? And now I'm on a tighter budget. And I feel like everyone's asking me to do stuff like that, which of course I'm happy to support, but that, where does that fit into that pie?
I'll piggyback on that, Janine. Mm-hmm. Those relationships, and if they're important to those folks on campus, I think then for us, it's, hey, Fine Arts, would you put a line item in your budget to help? Hey, Athletics, can you put a line item in your budget to help us offset some costs? So that's something that we've done on our campus.
That's the ownership, right? Yeah. That's the ownership. So it's not in our office. Not everything has to be from financial aid.
I think Rohan has a question. Rohan, jump right in.
I want to add to that really quickly, though, and say that, you know, there's pros and cons to that. So when Geneva and I were working together and I would carve out the budget, I would know how much roughly each year Geneva and I would calculate how much went to international trips, how much went to books, how much went, whatever, and then pull that out of the budget. And what was left was what we knew we were going to offer for tuition aid. I love the idea of individual departments having their own budget, but they're not financial aid people. And now we're losing consistency unless there's a really good relationship with a financial aid office. So if those individual areas have a line item budget for this, please make sure that they are following your protocols from your office, or else it becomes the wild, wild west. And once it gets out there that people are being treated differently by department or whatever, it's very difficult to pull back and creates huge morale issues.
Yeah, thank you. We are going to have a module on Friday on experiential funding and financial aid. And the title of it is From Prom Tickets to Cleats and Everything Else in Between. So we'll talk a little bit more about this on Friday. Rohan, go jump right in.
Thanks, Debbie. Actually, not a question. It was sort of a follow-up to Vivian's question. One of my previous schools, I didn't come from a school that had more money than God, but the director of financial aid, who's is a great mentor to me, he went around to the different departments to survey to figure out how much did it cost to get that school's experience from through that department that was outside of the tuition expenses. And essentially what it boiled down to was roughly, I think it was $2,500 to $3,000 a year or something like that. And so he started to build that into his financial aid calculations when he was assessing a family's demonstrated need. And so some of the times where families would come back and want to appeal, he would say, well, I've already taken into consideration the laptop over 4 years and books and all of that. With that said, he also did it where, to the point that Genevieve was sharing, took the additional ask out of it for the families that were receiving financial aid. So anything that was essential to that school's experience, there would be a document that would be completed by the adult responsible. So if it's the national exam for Spanish or something like that, they would complete the form, checking off each student that had to take the exam, send that to him, he'd plug it into his spreadsheet, and then his spreadsheet would actually spit out how much the business office should charge each of those kids. And so if the student was receiving 50% financial aid, that's all the family would be billed for and so forth. But again, that was only for experiences that were deemed essential to that school's experience.
Thank you, Rohan. Really helpful, really, really important stuff. All right, got about 30 seconds. Any final questions? Thoughts. Our next class is on Friday, October 29th, 2 days from now at the same time, 2 p.m. Eastern time. Your homework assignment is to go back to others in your school, collaborate, connect, communicate. I think Genevieve touched upon all those, and get answers or seek answers to these four questions. We'll do a quick group share and kind of report out on that process when you come back. And I would say we didn't add this to each question, but if you're able, to Jordy's point, know how each of these has changed over time, even just over 3 years, that's a really important point as well. So financial aid budget, percentage of students receiving aid, percentage of your school's operating budget that financial aid represents, average grant, and then maybe all of those just kind of over the last couple of years. Steve and Genevieve and Jordy, any final words before we say goodbye to everybody?
Look forward to seeing you on Friday.
If you're on the Northeast Coast, stay dry and get an ARC.
I think my Zoom went out because I think we lost power. I think I had a quick, that's what happened. There's really high winds in Massachusetts right now, so. All right, thank you, thank you. Thank you to Jordy, Steve, and Genevieve. I like to end all of my big sessions where we are supporting and helping each other with hands in. So all of you financial aid folks and those of you who are getting warmed up for your financial aid work ahead, hands in. And we will see you on Friday and we will make sure you get all the resources and slides from today. So thanks everybody. Have a great afternoon.